Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, hello everyone and welcome once again to WrestleChat Radio's Raw Report. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next hour, we'll be discussing last night's Monday Night Raw at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486 if you'd like to get in on the conversation. Of course, you can always log into our chat room. We can take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. One of the more unusual Monday Night Raws. It had a very odd feel. Maybe it was just me. I'll be interested to hear what all of you have to say, but I felt this had a very unusual feel to it. There were times when this show, to me, felt like the WWE was stalling while somebody got arrived or you know, stall for time until we think of something else. It wasn't centrally focused, and it seemed out of order a lot. But let's start with the beginning. Roman Reigns is announced, your new Intercontinental Champion. He comes out to, I would say, 70% positive, 65 to 70% positive reaction. There were certainly more cheers than normal for Roman Reigns. He even got a couple of you deserve it chants. He did the right thing. He acknowledged the people who were cheering him, which usually makes people stop booing you. And he said all the right things. But it kind of felt flat. If this was going to be a coronation, it felt a little flat. He did say, of course, that The Miz was right, that the Intercontinental title is prestigious. Many people have held this title that... legends in the sport, and he wanted to make it prestigious. So for that reason, he was going to be a fighting champion, unlike The Miz. And that brought The Miz to Raj out, which I'll tell you is a positive, and I'll tell you why. I really thought with The Miz gone, this isn't going to be good for Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel. We may not see them. And if we do see them, we may see them just backstage or in a very, very tiny, minuscule role doing something somewhere, but it could be months. And no, we're opening Monday Night Raw. So listen, for all the issues with Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel not getting much ring time, which they certainly do not, they get a lot of airtime. And they must have some faith in them because they've opened the show. And they've opened it saying that they would like to come down there and avenge The Miz, but they really can't because they're injured. But they found somebody who can. And lo and behold, it's Elias. Now, this, I sort of clenched my teeth a little because I said, oh, man, here we go. You know, you were building up Elias pretty good here. You're giving him some time to really work. And now all of a sudden, you're going to throw him to the lions because that's what fighting Roman Reigns. First title defense, that's what that's going to be, throwing him to the lions. But he really worked well, I thought, with The Miz to Raj. He said he was going to be performing later, said he was going to take the Intercontinental belt. On the way up the aisle, Roman Reigns bumps into Seth Rollins. They kind of exchange a fist bump or whatever to show some unity there because Dean Ambrose was on his honeymoon. So, I guess that's what they came up with as well. We'll just, in passing, give the old fist bump. But I thought the opening, while it was good, it worried me a little, Mike, because of the Elias thing. And it also, I think it fell a little flat as the coronation of Roman Reigns as a completely over face.
Right. It fell a little flat. But it's an overall positive for me because, one, I mean, and when we talked about this on a Saturday, where are all the youthful wrestlers? Where are all the 20-something, early 30-something wrestlers? Well, in Bo Dallas, you got one. You got a 28-year-old guy. You know, you got same thing for his brother Bray Wyatt. Bray Wyatt's nothing but 30. You know, those are your two, in my mind, those are your two top young stars coming up. Now, can they build Bo Dallas up to the point where he gets away from the Mr. Raj and does something bigger? We got to see, you know?
Yeah, it's just good to see him at all, because I really thought when The Miz went off to make the movie, I said, oh boy, that's going to be it for Axel and Dallas for a while. We may see them in some kind of a weird battle royal, or maybe they're going to be lumberjacks, but we're not going to see them much. And as it turns out, it looks like they're going to be the sidekicks of Elias for a while, Sabretooth.
Yeah, and me personally, I think they'll better fit in with someone like Elias, because we wanted those characters that we saw who was in this movie, that, you know, and they weren't doing that with the Miz. I mean, they was in suits and ties. I didn't really like them like that. I think they fit in better with Elias. I mean, they can even like an adaptive dressing style, even, you know. I mean, like, I don't dig them wearing suits and ties. But I think they're a better fit with Elias.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. It's opened up some avenues because, A, they really did later on, and we'll get to it, they really did one of their funniest segments with Elias. B, it makes you wonder, well, what's going to happen when The Miz comes back and Elias has his boys as his, henchmen. And C, it's going to give him a lot of airtime. So that part of it was good, and I thought the part that Roman Reigns basically did get over pretty much with the majority of the audience was good. I just think that I just had a wish they had done this a little bit differently, Todd, but it was a pretty good opening, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely, right? It was a pretty good opening with Roman Reigns coming out with the Intercontinental Belt. You know, like you said, I like to see prestigious back in the Intercontinental title once again.
So would I, but we'll see. We'll see how that goes. What I was happy to see is no Stephanie McMahon or Triple H on this entire show. So the only thing that's interesting about that is if they really don't appear very much in the near future, it makes you wonder if this whole Survivor Series, what was it for then? I mean, we know Triple H is going to try to get to the Kurt Angle thing. By the way, Kurt Angle injured. For people who haven't read it, Kurt Angle apparently pulled a muscle in his leg before the Survivor Series match. Says he's, you know, he worked through it. He's okay. But this is, folks, this is what happens when you're heading to 50 and you're trying to, you know, stay in ring shape. And that's why you got to have these young guys. Anyway, Seth Rollins comes to ringside and surprise, surprise, he's fighting Cesaro. Now, on paper, I'm saying, well, this is a great match, you know. Cesaro and Seth Rollins could light this up. But you also have to understand that last week we saw Ambrose and Sheamus, so it's right back to that cookie cutter. We got tag teams, let's fight them individually. We'll get two matches out of it, one week, one the other, if not the same week. It's lazy. That's the only way you can describe it. It's just lazy to keep doing that, and they do it all the time. They do it to the point where you don't even want to see them in the ring anymore because you're like, God, I've seen it so much, collectively, individually, six-man tags, anything you can think of. They're always in it. But they gave them a whole lot of time. A whole lot of time. And to be honest, this is a really good match. Probably the best match on the show. Opened the show. Cesaro's always good. The thing about Cesaro is what I call steady. He's not going to go out there and give you, I've never seen him go out there and give you a dud. I mean, I've seen him pull off matches that I say, you know, it was an average match, it was a solid match. But the worst he ever does is solid. That's the worst. And I can tell you, there's not a whole lot of guys on that roster, especially on the Raw roster. There's not a whole lot of guys on that roster you can say that about. But he's one of them. And Seth Rollins did a good job, too. I thought it was a very creatively booked match as far as the move set. You knew that Rollins would win. Well, maybe not, you know, because Ambrose won, and you figure maybe they go one up, so you're not sure who's going to win next week in that big tag team match. But no, Rollins went over, and makes me think there's no way the Shield's getting the belt back. I mean, if Ambrose beats Sheamus, Rollins beats Cesaro, effectively, I doubt they're going to get the belts back, although it would work because then the Shield would have all the belts. Or, you know, except the heavyweight championship, and that's coming. Overall, a good match. Afterwards, Seth kind of does a little few one-liners there and says, well, you know, the Shield, no, we're more together than we've ever been. Just Dean's on his honeymoon. I haven't heard from him. I hope he didn't fall off the face of the earth. And I hope Renee didn't use her card to book the room. And he's doing his best to just keep the Shield thing going because they know that's where their bread is buttered at this point. Oddly enough, that's where Roman Reigns' bread is definitely buttered because it got him cheered. Seth Rollins, you know, he was kind of going under a little too until the Shield came back. Ambrose was still Ambrose. But a great match, Mike, I thought.
Yeah, it was a great match. You're right. You know, a just solid Cesaro match is a great match for anybody else. You know, that's how good Cesaro is. And that's what's so frustrating about what they've done with Cesaro is that if this guy can be that good in the ring and just, you know, slightly above average on the mic, which Cesaro can be, why is he not in a bigger position, you know? And we know the answer to that, but that's been the question with Cesaro. And, yeah, you're right. They're definitely buttered with the Shield right now, and the bread is buttered with the Shield. Ambrose is Ambrose. I mean, and I don't foresee them splitting the Shield up anytime soon. I mean, there were rumors about Ambrose going heel, but I don't see that.
Yeah, I think maybe the WWE is reconsidering based on the fact that it's going over really well, and maybe they think it's too soon. We still have some time to WrestleMania, so we'll see. Sabretooth, you know, a great match, and they gave it plenty of time, so I was happy with this opening match of Raw. But let me interject this before I go to you. I had somebody write to me and say, you know, you were down on Finn Balor and saying all this kind of stuff about Finn Balor. Did you see the WWE poll? WWE had a poll that basically said, who do you fans want to see fight Brock Lesnar? And Finn Balor won 62%. Highest guy was 10%. So he won by a landslide, according to the fans. Here's what I have to say about that. The rest of the guys on that list, Samoa Joe, we've seen it. Braun Strowman, we've seen it. Seth Rollins, we've seen it. Triple H, we've seen it. Bray Wyatt was on the list, but you know, no one's voting for Bray Wyatt. Put Cesaro on that list. Put Cesaro on that list. And then let's see if Finn Balor gets 62%. I doubt it. Anyway, Sabretooth, it was a good match. Very solid match, I thought.
Yeah, very solid and very logical. I mean, because I mean, like Cesaro had Seth on the run the whole match. I mean, like I said, it was logical. I mean, like Seth didn't try to overpower him. I mean, because he knew he couldn't. You know, he would use like a hit and run. I mean, he used his speed against Cesaro. There's no way that he can match up strength with Cesaro. And then when he did win, he didn't win it like it wasn't easy. I mean, he won it. You know, he went about opportunity and he took it. You know, so it was a good solid match. And as far as the Shield goes, I don't think it's the same Shield because now it seems like they're making Roman Reigns the mouthpiece of the Shield, and that wasn't how they used to be. Seth Rollins used to be the leader of the Shield, and now it seems like the Roman Reigns is the leader, and I'm not feeling that.
Yeah, you're right about that. They're shipped in Roman Reigns' position because they want him to be the main guy. There's no question about that. Okay, so we get to what is supposed to be a six-woman tag match with Sasha Banks, Bayley, and Mickie James taking on Paige and Sonya Deville and Mandy Rose. Sasha comes out. Mickie James' music hits. Nobody comes out. Bayley's music hits. Nobody comes out. Paige comes out with her crew. They're now called Absolution, which is better than PMS. But here's my bone to pick with this. Does every group have to have a name? Does every group have to have this cool name? It just reminds me of like some little kids in a clubhouse somewhere. Oh, there's more than three of us. We got to give ourselves some cool, dark, mysterious name that everybody will be like, cool, that's cool. I mean, do you really think that, I don't know. I think it starts to take away from the overall reality of it that, you know, Paige and the girls get together and say, what shall we call ourselves, girls? Who cares what you call yourself? If you got a mission to do something, go do something. Let's call ourselves Absolution. Let's call ourselves the this or the that. Or oh God. It's getting played. It's really, really overplayed now. But anyway, they come out. They beat the hell out of Paige. I should say, of course, that Alexa Bliss was on guest commentary. She excused herself and headed out. So no face turn like somebody thought, a few people thought might happen with Alexa Bliss. That's not happening. She certainly did not go down to help Sasha. Listen, it was what it was, but it proves my point, gang. And that is Mandy Rose, while she's probably ready ring-wise, and Paige is, of course, ready. Mandy Rose is not ready on that mic, and Sonya Deville is not ready either way. Either way. Did you see the way she reacted when the crowd started giving her the old Watt chant? And you know, she just had no – she's not ready. You want to put those girls in that team, make Paige the mouthpiece, don't give anybody else the mic. Not for a while, because it's not working. Those girls are not ready to do that, Mike, and woefully obvious, especially Sonya Deville.
That's right. I mean, that brings me back to my point. Yeah, I get what they're trying to do with Sonya Deville. They want a tough girl in that, a tougher girl in that group, a girl that can be seen as you don't want to mess with her, a dark alley. But, I mean, I always thought that the girls that should have been brought up were the two Aussies, you know. You know,
yeah.
Those two girls, you know, Billy Kay had already been up. So, you know, why not bring those two girls up, you know, and put them with Paige? Now, I understand, and like you said, you don't name yourself. I mean, originally the Four Horsemen did not name themselves, you know. Neither did
right.
The Triple Threat. They didn't name
no.
themselves, you know.
Yeah, everybody's got to come up with some cool name. It's like the Little Rascals, you know, in the clubhouse over the He-Man Woman Haters Club, you know. Anything that sounds ominous, Sabretooth is okay, I guess.
Right. And also, if they wanted their name, they didn't have to, like, come out and just say our name is Absolution. What they should have done is just, like, have, like, one of the announcers, like, use a word to describe them. And then they, you know, then they maybe, like, so-and-so said a certain word about us, and I think we're going to take that name. But you don't come out saying,
right.
Where is it? You know?
Yeah.
And also,
give them a reason to say, okay, we'll call ourselves that then. Yeah, instead of, because you're not forming a rock band. Okay? You're not like, oh, let's form a rock band. Let's call ourselves, you know, whatever. It's silly. I think it's silly, Todd.
You're absolutely right there. It was a ridiculous name for Involution, whatever you call it. Like you
absolutely.
Said, I would have had like a... Like a different name, like something makes sense.
I don't even know what the
like
hell it's supposed to mean, right? What the hell does it suppose? Absolution, evolution, absolution, revolution. God, forget it. Just come out and do what you do. Anyway, so they tried to get over as the heels. I think that you know, Paige is Paige. She's going to get over, but the other girls are going to suffer for this because. They didn't bring them up, Mike, because they were the most talented ones on the roster. They brought them up because they were the most expendable ones on the NXT roster, and that's just a fact. I hate to say it, but that's just a fact. Which goes back to what we were saying on our Sunday show, which, of course, is that NXT is its own federation. They're not about priming talent to come to the main roster. They're about keeping the talent that they need to do what they want to do down there, and that's not what it's supposed to be. AAA ball clubs don't keep their pitchers and their ball players away from the majors because what are we going to do to replace them? That AAA club. Anyway, we get the return of, let's go to the Samoa Joe thing first because that's easy to do. Samoa Joe comes out. He's going to fight Titus O'Neil. Because he never did before. And if you remember right, he got jumped prior and it ended up being Finn Balor. against Samoa Joe. So he never really got that one-on-one match. He got it this time. It looked to me, Samoa Joe's coming off a pass-out victory over Finn Balor. He decimated Titus O'Neil. Then he decimated a fresh Apollo Crews. So, I mean, this is how you push a guy. So despite the fact that he was absolutely used as garbage in the Survivor Series, woken up a little bit and said, well, we got to use Joe. You know, we got to have somebody, and Joe's going to be the guy. There's no question. A lot of this show was about Joe. And he does a good job. He's a good heel. I don't really have a problem with it. If you're going to push Samoa Joe, then, you know, that's great. Push Samoa Joe, Mike.
Yeah, that's great. And push him. And that's the thing. But, you know, we got to see, you know, this is a good way to rehab the man. And we got to see what happens with him. And look, like we've said before, he's one of these guys that isn't going to be – he's like AJ. You know, Samoa Joe is what, 38, 39, whatever he is.
Yeah.
And he's not going to be around for an awful long time, so they better do something with him and do something with him quick.
Yeah, it looks like they're going to. It looks like this is his big push, Sabretooth. I'm okay with it. I mean, I think he does a good job as a heel, and we'll see where it goes.
Well, I like the push. The only thing I regret about it is that they didn't do something like this when he first came to the main roster. I mean, like, when he first came to the main roster, he was attached to Triple H and all that. And that's what ruined his arrival here. I mean, imagine if he had, like, made his debut last night on the main roster doing what he did last night.
Yeah. Oh, no, you're absolutely right. He was totally mishandled when he first came up. They almost destroyed him. Almost destroyed him. And now they're saying, wait a minute, let's erase the Black Dart over again. Ladies and gentlemen, Samoa Joe, that's what it reminds me of. The WWE does that a lot, though. They do it too much, where they sort of ruin a character, and then they're like, forget all that, erase it, and starting tonight, it's a new character, even though he's the same guy. Ladies and gentlemen, here he comes, and you're supposed to think, well, this is the debut. They really need to think their debuts out a lot better. I agree with that. Okay, so let's see. Bray Wyatt comes back, cuts a promo that nobody wants to listen to anymore. And it's a shame, because if you've ever honestly dropped the ball on a character, this is the guy. There was a time, as Mike often says on this show, where Bray Wyatt had an entire crowd of 10,000 people singing, he's got the whole world in his hands. Believing in that character and paying to see that character. And now you got fans chanting Watt when he talks because guess what? Nothing changed except your booking of him. So you destroyed that character. And I don't know if you can rebuild it. I really don't know. But I do think it's ironic that he's fighting Matt Hardy, and this is another guy who you've already destroyed. And he can turn broken, and he can do whatever he wants, all he wants. It's too late. It's too late. What are you going to do with him when he's broken? All of a sudden, he's going to be a world beater? He's going to beat people individually? I don't think so. Well, you'd have to do that, wouldn't you? You'd have to pretty much push Matt Hardy if he turns broken. And I don't see him doing it. So what's he going to do? Be 50-50? He's going to come out and go, delete, 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 and then lose to somebody and still go, delete, 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 delete. It's not going to work. It's not going to work because it's too late. Just like it's not going to work with Bray Wyatt because it's too late. Nobody fears the face of fear when everybody has already beaten him. If you really wanted to build back Bray Wyatt, you needed to debut him again after this illness in a major way, like you did Samoa Joe. You needed to have Bray Wyatt do something that you say, whoa, there's a major storyline going to happen here. You didn't do it. You gave him Matt Hardy, who Elias beat last week too. Matt Hardy's just been cannon fodder because they're saying lose a bunch and then that'll drive you crazy and you'll go into the broken Matt Hardy gimmick where you'll be much more entertaining, but you're still going to lose. I guarantee that's what the WWE is going to do with him. Mike, what do you think overall about the return of Bray Wyatt and the Matt Hardy thing?
Well, you expected Bray Wyatt to win. Look, I mean, if they were smart, they would do your idea from, what was it, Sunday or whatever it was, where, you know, the Bludgeon Brothers and Braun Strowman go on tears, and that's going to be part of Bray Wyatt's plan, if they were smart, which I don't think they are.
No, well, they've proven they're not. I mean, again, you got Bray Wyatt coming back, and you know you got to do something with him. You say, we're going to give him a victory over Matt Hardy. And it'll be twofold. You know, we always say a good match accomplishes more than one thing. Well, you could argue that in their eyes, it's accomplished two things. It reestablishes Bray Wyatt as a guy who can win, and it gives us a branch to the tree of Matt Hardy's going to turn broken. But I'm going to argue that it really didn't accomplish the first one. It doesn't help Bray Wyatt to beat Matt Hardy. What would have helped Bray Wyatt is if he had to come out and did something major to someone major. Or he somehow played into a major picture of something. Just beating Matt Hardy, in and of itself, is not enough, in my opinion, Sabretooth.
And what's crazy is that they didn't even have the gumption to even play up on the fact that Bray Wyatt could at least, like, play on Matt Hardy's weakness at the moment. Like you said, he's been losing matches. His brother's out injured. I mean, like, how hard would it have been for Bray Wyatt to come out and reference Matt Hardy? I mean, a guy who's obviously going through a rough time, he can be like, I'm fighting so and so. He's weak. He's going through a week, you know, whatever. He beat him, he could at least hit the mic, like acknowledge like you were at your weakest or whatever, or acknowledge what he's going through. You know, like trying to recruit him at least. They couldn't even do that.
Yeah, it didn't look like they even wanted to bother with Bray Wyatt. It looked like they're like, well, we're paying him, get him out there. We can get a main event, not a main event, but we can get an event out of him with a higher ranked guy down the road if we give him a win or two. I wasn't too impressed with this whole thing. In my opinion, it was basically just to get Matt Hardy toward being that broken gimmick, Todd.
Hey, like you said, I just don't want to see the broken gimmick ever again. It didn't work before. Where's it going to work now?
It worked with TNA only because it was so weird. Fans never saw anything like it, so they were like, well, this is cool. But a steady diet of it, and they would have got tired of it. They were getting tired of it. By the time it ended, they were getting kind of tired of it. And the WWE's not going to have them chasing people with firework guns and having drones flying around. That's not going to happen. WWE will not do that. I don't even know how much they can legally do yet. I don't know. But I just think the broken gimmick is going to have to be altered. And I don't know if fans of the original one is going to like it very much. We'll see. It's probably coming, so we will see. We then get Asuka versus Dana Brooke. And this is just ridiculous. I mean, here we go. Dana Brooke comes out and says, I found the weakness in Asuka. She's a slow starter. And then she gets pinned in she gets made to submit in 4 seconds. Dana Brooke is as close to off this roster as a girl's going to get. Then back out come Absolution. And mysteriously, they circle the ring, but of course, all three of them are afraid of Asuka. I guess that's what they're trying to portray. There's one of two things happening here. Either all three of them are afraid of Asuka, which is ludicrous. Absolutely ludicrous. They're not afraid of any of the other girls, though. Just Asuka. Because she's 7 foot tall and 400 pounds, right? Or Asuka's part of them. Now, if they're smart, the latter will be the right answer. They'll say that Asuka's in on this whole thing. But they're not going to do it. I just got a feeling they're not going to pull the trigger on it. So it's probably the former, which is all three of us badass girls who can beat up all of these other girls in the division have circled Asuka, but we're kind of nervous about jumping in because she's so tough. Hated this segment. It was just a waste of time, in my opinion, Mike.
You know, when the Shield first showed up, did they back down from anybody? You know, when they first showed up, and they didn't back down. That was my big problem with this thing, you know. They should, Absolution should never have backed down. They should have gotten in that ring and beat Asuka down. That would have served 2 points. That would have cemented them as a heel, and that would have absolutely turned Asuka into a face.
You are absolutely 100% dead on the money, and that's what I thought they were going to do. And when they did, when I saw them come out, I said, okay, this is smart. Because if they beat Asuka up and leave her lying, A, it's going to make this team look like, okay, they're serious. And B, it's going to get some sympathy for Asuka. Because Asuka has no sympathy because there's nothing to be sympathetic to her about. She's apparently invincible. So the fans need to get on Asuka's side and say, oh man, I can't wait to see such a invincible girl who now suddenly has been beaten down get these girls one at a time. That would have been the way to go. That's Wrestling 101. So I thought Asuka was going to get her first beatdown where literally the announcers were going to say, this is awful. And, you know, it took three of these girls to do it. I hope they're proud of themselves, blah, blah, blah. I really thought that's where this was going, Sabretooth. Instead, apparently, the female version of the NWO are frightened of Asuka.
I mean, I thought that too. Seeing how, like, they jumping people backstage and coming out to the ring jumping people. I was sure they were trying to beat her down. I mean, I'm sure Asuka would put up a good fight, but that numbers game would have won out. But they couldn't do it. I mean,
Sabretooth, this was the time to get Sonya Deville over. This was the time to have them jump in the ring. Oh, yes, you're right. Asuka fights them off pretty good, and then let Sonya do one really good MMA type move, and boom, down goes Asuka. And then they all gang jump her, and you say, "Wow, did you see that kick, or did you see that hit, or whatever? That girl's the real deal." You could have got Sonya over. The only explanation for this that I'll accept is if Asuka's a part of this and she's going to turn heel, because if this isn't the case, this was absolute garbage booked.
Right. Because, what heel faction abused, basically? I mean, okay, they have a name, that Absolution. So basically, basically, this was their debut. And what heel faction debuts by being scared of somebody like that?
Right. They're already showing weakness, like Mike said. It's absolutely ridiculous. It would have been like the NWO second week out saying, uh-oh, we're scared of Sting. Stay away from Sting.
You're absolutely right there. I would have, have him be powerful for a while, then after a year or so, have him be afraid.
You don't even have to wait
Sting,
a year. I mean, look, all you had to do last night is have Asuka get her clock cleaned. Specifically by Sonya, okay? Let her fight off Paige and Mandy for a minute. Let Sonya do something heavy duty to her, and then that's thunder enough that the gang jumping was successful. And she's left lying in that ring while those girls prance out. And you've made Asuka a star, because now people are going to say, now I want to see what Asuka is going to do against these girls individually or collectively. They might have picked on the wrong person, and that's what you tease. You know, you have them say, my God, they've beaten her down. I've never seen Asuka take such a horrible beating in my life. It took three girls to do it. Then you have one of these announcers say, I think they picked on the wrong girl. And you've got the seeds planted in the fans' minds of what's going to happen next week. Asuka's going to get some kind of revenge. The only acceptable solution to what I saw last night is if Asuka joins them. Because if she doesn't, this was horrible booking. And it undermined your group that you're trying to make world beaters, I suppose. Anyway, we get the Fatal 4-Way 205 Live thing. Folks, let's face it. I don't care how many times you try to repackage this. I was right, and I'm going to tell you I was right. You can have the greatest athletes in the ring, and if nobody cares about their character, nobody cares about their match. All of these guys were great. All of these guys put on a good match. It was an outstanding athletic display. Nobody cared. Everyone sat on their hands. There was zero sound. That's because wrestling isn't about who can do the best moves and who is the best athlete and how many flips can we do and how impressive can we look. It's not just about that. You need to establish characters that people care about, and nobody cared about any of those people. So unfortunately, that match, while it was a good match, it didn't carry with it any real weight. Now, I hope next week when we have the Fatal 4-Way, I hope Cedric Alexander wins, because then we'll see Rich Swann and Cedric Alexander have to fight each other, and not only will that be a really good match, but I'll care about that match because it could have ramifications. One of them might turn heel. They were supposed to be sort of like a tag team. It could be very interesting. There's branches on that tree. So I'll care about that match if it happens, Sabretooth, but nobody cared about this one.
Yeah, it was a hell of a match. And also, what's still bothering me is, like, why doesn't 205 Live have their own GM? I mean, like, why is Kurt Angle still managing 205 Live guys? I mean, they're their own brand. I mean, does he show up on Tuesday night after SmackDown and manage those guys also? I mean,
I guess.
Give 205 Live their own thing. Give them their own GM.
I agree 100%. If they're going to be a separate federation, they got to do that, Mike. But nobody cared about this match.
You're right on that. And look, they missed a chance. I know they didn't want to negotiate with Conan, but they missed a chance to have their own GM and not getting Ray Jr., you know?
Or give him Daniel Bryan, for God's sake, and take him off SmackDown. Or if you don't want to do that because you think he's too big of a star, there are other people. There's a lot of other people you could have picked. A lot of other people. Anyway, let's get on to Roman Reigns versus Elias. My inbox was flooded today with 50-50. Some people were saying, oh, yeah, you know, you've been big on Elias and what he do all match, chin lock, he sucks. Okay, well, yeah, the match started out slow. But I don't think it finished slow at all. He did the beautiful flying off the top rope elbow drop. They fought outside the ring. There was a lot of near falls. There was a very brief chant of "This is awesome" by the crowd. And I want people to understand something. Often on this show, we talk about wins and losses and why they matter. But we also talk about how sometimes a loss can be better than a win. It can do more for you, or at least it can help you. And sometimes you being elevated is a loss. Last night, we saw a perfect example of it. Elias did not win. Elias got pinned. But Elias joined the top of the pack last night. And I'll tell you why. A, he dominated Roman Reigns for a very large majority of that match. Who else has done that? B, the announcers had in their ear all night long, Vince McMahon or whoever, saying, sell Elias. Oh, did you think Elias would do this good? No, I can't believe it. My goodness, he's dominated. Have you ever seen Roman Reigns dominated like this? Elias is unbelievable. I've never seen anything like this. They are pushing Elias, which is the right move because they got somebody in Elias, and they know they do. Yeah, Elias lost. But last night, with that loss, he joined the ranks of the top six or seven guys up there. Maybe top 10. And we'll see what ends up happening. But that's the way I really feel. Now, Samoa Joe, of course, jumps Roman Reigns afterwards. That was pretty good, I thought. Joe did a good job of saying, I'm coming for you and everything. But that's the story. That's the after story of this match, is that Roman Reigns is going to have to deal with Samoa Joe. But the front story of this match, Sabretooth, is that Elias has arrived and the WWE realizes it.
Yeah, I mean, like the show first started, I was like you, thinking they were like going to throw Elias to Roman Reigns, like throw him to the lions or whatever. But no, I was saying, that's to accomplish one thing, probably two things with this match. Make Elias look strong, even though he loses, and also make the fans look forward to seeing these two guys fight again, because now you're thinking, like, the next time they fight, Elias could beat Roman Reigns. I mean, there's,
right.
You know, and they accomplished that. I want to see these two. If they said these two guys were like fighting again, like next week, I'd watch it. But even better, like, I mean, and like the reason that Elias lost, basically, because Roman Reigns had experience on him. Now, like, say, like, give him like a couple of years and they fight again, Elias would.
Right.
It's in your head that Elias would kick Roman Reigns' ass.
That is part of the storyline, is that they're saying, well, Elias, is he ready for this opportunity? Man, he he pretty much almost was, you know. And that's kind of the story, is if Elias had a little more experience under his belt, he'd be his equal easily. And listen, credit Roman Reigns, because I'll tell you why. Roman Reigns, in every way possible in that match, sold Elias. Now, he was told to do that. He was told to go out there and sell Elias. We're pushing him, so make sure you sell him. And he did a great job, even at the end when he won and looked down at Elias like, okay, that I wasn't expecting. Wasn't expecting that kind of a fight out of this guy. Reigns did a great job, I think, Mike.
Yeah, and look, that match, not only did Roman Reigns prove everybody wrong and yet again that he's not a good wrestler and not a good performer, but he absolutely sold Elias to the point of the guy saying, well, Elias is the guy, the commentator, I think it was Corey Graves even said that headlock, that chin lock. And people go, chin lock is boring, it's boring. Well, that's what you do. That's a logical. You got a guy that's got more experience than you, that's more powerful than you. What do you want to do? You want to wear him down. That's logical.
Right.
That chin lock was a logical thing for him to do right there.
You're right. See, I love that about it. People were saying it was boring. Okay, they weren't flying all over the ring. But then when the 205 Live guys fly all over the ring, you say that's boring. So I don't know what you want. Elias gave an old school match where it started out slow and then the pace built. And toward the end, there was a lot of near finishes. There was one moment there when I said, my God, they're going to let Elias win the belt. I really thought so. When the whole Miz Taraj interfered and everything, I'm like, oh my God, they're going to let Elias win this belt. For a heartbeat, Sabretooth, I really thought, crap, they're gonna do it. They're going to pull the trigger on this.
I did too. The movie turned his back and went after Bo Dallas. I said, "Oh, here, watch him come up from behind and do something." I mean, yeah, but that was a perfect textbook match, though. Especially like I said, I mean, like that chin lock, it was logical. I mean,
yep.
I mean that was a damn near perfect match. I mean, like,
see,
I said,
that's
I mean,
what I thought. I had a lot of people complain about it, saying it was boring. Okay, it's not Kenny Omega. It's not the style. This was a good old-school wrestling match. It had a beginning that was slow-paced but logical. It built up. It had a good ending. I was 100% happy with this match. I had zero problems with this match. I'm an Elias fan, and I'm telling you right now, I knew he was going to lose, or I thought he was going to lose. When he lost, I was not disappointed, Todd, because I said this match just made Elias a star in the WWE.
You're absolutely right there. Elias did put up a good fight with Reigns last night, and that proves to you Elias could wrestle too, and that also proves he could fight as well.
He's got the charisma, he's got the talent, he's got the knowledge, he's got the size, which is good. He's going to go a long way, and the WWE, I think, gave the nod of approval because they're the ones who told Roman Reigns to go out there and make him look good, and they're the ones that told the announcers to keep plugging him on the headset. So, bigger things for Elias. I'm glad. We then get Kane versus Jason Jordan, and Jordan's doing this weird kind of gimmick where fans are picking on me, and they're saying I'm faking my injury, but I'm not injured anymore, so I want to go out and prove to fans that I'm not running away from anybody. I want to beat Kane. Kurt Angle seems proud of him and says, yeah, okay, great. Go on out there and beat Kane. I'm not going to mince any words. I love Kane. Kane needs to go retire. I loved watching Kane for I don't know how many years. I don't want to remember him this way. He's slow. He's out of shape. He's panting for air. God bless him. But the time has come. So he has a non-match with Jordan where Jordan just, again, sell my knee and falls outside the ring. This is Jordan leading to being a heel, which is fine. I actually enjoyed Jordan this week, which means I'm going to enjoy him as a heel. This leads to Finn Balor coming out because he's beaten up Jason Jordan so bad that it looks like he's going to end his career. However, Finn Balor doesn't come running out. Here's the thing. The poor guy's getting his ass beat, okay? And Finn Balor's, I'll come to the rescue, but first I'll come out and straighten my jacket. I'll orchestrate the crowd to go, da-da! I mean, at some point, Sabretooth, this got to be almost a satire.
Yeah, I didn't get that neither. I mean, like, Lord knows if I'm getting my ass beat, I don't want someone making an entrance. I don't want someone making an entrance. I'm saying.
I couldn't believe it. If you're Jason Jordan, you're like, get your ass down here. To hell with orchestrating the crowd and straightening up your
right.
collar.
And also, as far as Kane goes, I mean, that, I do it. What pissed me off about that Kane, they had Kane on the ground begging for Braun Strowman. No, that's not the Kane I want. I don't want Kane on the ground begging for someone to stop beating. No, Kane. I mean, when Kane hit him with that chair and it didn't affect Braun Strowman, Kane should not have looked stunned. Kane should have walloped his ass again. These two guys should have been, like, going at it, and, like, somehow Braun Strowman got the upper hand. He shouldn't have had Kane on the ground groveling and leave me alone. No, that's not the Kane I want.
You're 100% correct. I said the same thing. I said, I don't think this is going to lead to another match because Braun Strowman got too much revenge. He basically did everything he needs to do to get revenge on Kane, so why do we need to see another match? We don't. He put the thing around Kane's neck and tried to break his larynx twice. And he beat the hell out of him until Kane was begging for mercy. So I don't want to see a match now. I mean, that's it. But I think one of the big stories here is, you know, Finn Balor comes out and once again gets beaten up by Kane. You're not going to – I'm sorry. You're not going against Brock Lesnar if you're not beating up – you know, you're not coming close to beating Kane. It's not happening. And by the way, the fans – people were saying, did you hear the fans chanting for Balor? No, they weren't chanting for Balor. They were chanting, let's go mayor, not let's go Balor. They were chanting, let's go mayor, because he's running for the mayor of that town in Tennessee, Kane. So it was hard to get Kane to have any heat because they're all like, this guy's going to be our mayor, you know. So they did their best. I guess that's why they had Kane grovel and stuff to make it clear he's the heel. Because it's hard to be a face in a town you're running for office in and you're a celebrity. But they kind of achieved it. But I 100% think Sabretooth is correct. If there was anything more to this, Kane should have hit him with a chair once, hit him with a chair twice. If it had no effect, Braun Strowman should have grabbed him like he was going to slam him. Kane, get away, slide under the bottom rope, live to fight another day. And then we say, oh, we want to see this. But no, you kind of ended it right there last night, in my opinion. Mike, it was weird. I don't really want to see a match now. I think that was kind of it, right?
That was kind of it. And look, back to what Balor did, that kind of reminds me of when Terry Taylor turned heel on Chris Adams, you know? And what the way they did that is, you know, there were several times that he came down to the ring very, very slowly, and as Adams was getting his behind beat, you know, and that's what this looked like. This looked like they're trying to keep a face, and Balor making Balor a heel and starting a feud between Balor and Jordan, you know.
See, the thing about Jordan is we already know he's going heel. That's probably the reason the WWE didn't care if Finn Balor came out like that, because they were like, you know what? You're going to get booed for helping Jason Jordan, probably. This is the town that Kane's running for mayor in. Jason Jordan is about as popular as a fart in church. And you coming out to save him, you might get booed. So take your time, get the crowd into it, because, you know, at least you'll get a pop, because you're not going to get a pop helping Jason Jordan. And they're right about that, but it still looked really ridiculous. It still looked ridiculous. And now if Jason Jordan says something about it, you're kind of like, yeah, I agree. That was kind of a half-hearted come help me. While you're doing your whole orchestrating the crowd and straightening your jacket routine. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what any of that is. What I do know is this was a clunker. I mean, a clunker of a main event. I kept saying to myself, something more is going to happen. It can't end this way. Raw's not going to end with Kane walking up the rampway holding his neck and Braun Strowman in the ring. That's not enough. Something's going to happen. Somebody's coming out. Something big is about to happen. And then I see the little thing in the corner of the screen that says, you know, Monday Night Raw, WWE, and I'm like, this is over. This is over? That was not a good ending. That is not a good ending. And for the people who are the huge Balor fans, I'm sorry, but, you know, I told you, it's not going to work with him, and I was right. The WWE saw the light in that. And I know a lot of people are mad at me saying, if he's not over, how come the whole crowd? I don't care what the whole crowd does. I'm telling you, he's not over with the workers at all, because they don't want to have to say, I got to sell that a 170-pound guy is punching me punch for punch for punch for punch for punch back when I'm 270 pounds, because it makes me look like either A, I couldn't punch my way out of a paper bag, or B, he's as strong as I am, and there goes my gimmick. See, everybody has a gimmick. Everybody has a selling point. Everybody has that one thing that you say, this is the main thing about this guy that I got to sell. The Miz is sneaky, and he has help. And he'll outsmart you. Ambrose is just stone cold crazy. He'll kick out of anything, and you never know what he's going to do, and you have to sell the lunacy of why would a man do this? What the hell is he doing? Roman Reigns is that power guy who you just say, he's going to keep coming. You got to understand what these people are. Finn Balor has none of that. He just knows what he is. And I'm a guy who, I'm just a tough guy. And I just stand in there and doesn't matter. Whether you're 170 like me or 370, I fight you the same way. WWE saw that and said, nah, we're not doing that. And I think they're making him learn his lesson by going out there and getting his ass kicked by big guys. So maybe he understands, look, you have to fight the big guys different. So this is not Finn Balor's death blow. They're going to use Finn Balor. If they were smart, they'd use him in the Bullet Club. They turn him heel and let him go with Gallows and Anderson, and let's see this transpire. It's not the end of Finn Balor, but it's, you know, for you people who say I want to see Finn Balor against Brock Lesnar, why? Why? You know he's not winning. And on top of that, you know it's just going to be it's basically going to be what you saw with AJ, because that's how they'd plan it. Finn gets thrown all around the ring. He makes a miraculous comeback when Brock Lesnar's tired. He goes for his big move, goes to the top rope, goes for that big jump off foot stomp. Lesnar catches him with an F5. It's over. There, I've just saved you the trouble. That's exactly the way the match is booked. But this Monday Night Raw, Mike, I think it fell very flat at this last match.
It really did, but that's not going to affect my grade, because I'm on the strength of two things, on the strength of the Elias thing, and the Elias match and the Seth Rollins match, and that's another person that we know whose gimmick is. He's the architect. He's a smart guy, you know.
Yep.
He's the one that put together the Shield. That's who he is. We know. We think we know who Jordan is. He's just 240 pounds.
Let's go Seth Rollins here for a minute, Mike. What did Cesaro do last night? He sold, number one, Seth Rollins sold that even though Seth Rollins is in phenomenal physical condition, he sold that Cesaro's much stronger than me, period. End of conversation. B, all those punches that Cesaro throws, those are thrown with major impact, and I'm selling him with major impact. And Cesaro sold, it takes a lot to beat this guy down, and just when you think you've got him, sometimes he plays possum, and he can hit you off of one of your offensive moves. He can hit an offensive move, and I just got caught. He outsmarted me. Simple as that. That's the game they played, Mike, and that's logical, and it works.
That's logical, and it works. What they originally did let Finn Balor do, like you said. And look, I'll go ahead and give you my grade right now. On the strength of those two matches, I'm going to go ahead and give it a B-.
Okay, well, those were definitely two good matches. And by the way, if anybody's doubting me, I want you to go back and watch the Finn Balor match with Cesaro, where he gives Finn Balor two of those European uppercuts that turned Seth Rollins inside out, and Balor stays on his feet. I want you to watch that. Then you tell me how Finn Balor has great ring psychology and he works smart matches with guys and sells what he needs to sell from them. Then come talk to me about that. Todd, what's your rating?
I got to go with Mike there, a B-.
Okay, I think you guys are being too kind, and I'll tell you why. The opening match was great. And I loved the fact that they pushed Elias, and I thought that was a great old school type match. Those two matches were excellent. I'd give them both A's. Having Paige's crew basically back off from Asuka was an F. That is a total failure. I mean, 100% disastrous failure. The 205 Live crew is all but dead. All but dead. I have absolutely no idea at all why you would bring back Bray Wyatt to such a lukewarm deal as you did. Doesn't make me think there's anything going on there for poor Bray. And I, you know, there was some of it that was just downright boring. There was some of it that I'm just like, I don't really care. You know, and when I don't even care about what Bray Wyatt's doing, when I don't even care about what the 205 Live guys are doing, that's not good. Because I'm really one of these wrestling fans who, I'm a hard-nosed wrestling fan. I will watch anything. And I will try to find the good in it. But, I mean, last night, there was a lot of times when it felt like they were just stalling. I do want to mention, though, you know what? Let me give it – I was going to give it a C minus. I'm going to give it a C plus only because I thought that the Miztourage was so funny in that concert with Elias when they were playing the harmonicas. Funny as hell. And then for Elias, who just has all the friggin' right lines and charisma in the world, to literally just say, hey, that was great. Who knew you guys could play the harmonica like that? Right away, those guys are elevated just by that. Sabretooth, what's your rating?
I'm with you. I'm going to give it a C. The first match with Seth Rollins and Cesaro, A-plus match. Along with Elias and Roman Reigns, a hell of a match, damn near perfect match. My biggest gripe was how they treated Kane. Because if Kane is, I mean, because I expect more from Kane than to be grouped. If Kane is going to retire soon or whatever, this should be Kane's swan song. If Ron Strowman is going to retire Kane shouldn't be going out groveling on the ground. He should. I mean, we've seen Kane in the past be sadistic, doing stuff with fire. Actually, Kane is a sadistic monster, and we're not getting this. I mean, he should be going down in his bag of tricks trying to do something messed up to Braun Strowman. We're not getting that. He's on the ground groveling. Leave him alone. Nuh-uh, I don't want that from Kane.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. They destroyed any credibility that Kane had, and that's not the way you want to go out in your career. Kane should go out strong. Kane deserves to go out strong. If I had to book Kane going out forever, then the Kane that I book going out is the Kane that hits Braun Strowman with a chair a couple times, no effect, gets away from Strowman. We build up a great big buried alive match, and Kane simply loses the buried alive match. No pinfall, no nothing, just loses the buried alive match, and that's it. There's Kane's swan song. Mike, I'm going to give you the final word on this thing with Kane. I do agree with Sabretooth. I think that was horribly handled.
Right. And one other thing that they need to do, I mean, how long can a guy have a neck injury? I mean, I know he's selling it all right, but at some point they're going to have to take that gimmick away from take that thing away from Axel. How long can you have that neck injury, you know?
I don't know. How long did Bob Orton have the cast on? You know, I think that they're doing that. I think they're doing the Bob Orton cast thing, really. Anyway, should be an interesting SmackDown tonight, and we will be back here on Friday to discuss SmackDown. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you then.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. WrestleChat Radio is a Savage Blade production.